Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm James Hattori, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In 2004, John Edwards was the new kid on the block, the sunny centrist who charmed a whole lot of Democratic voters. Obviously, he can't be new again, but he's repositioned himself in the 2008 race as a bolder, feistier, perhaps even angrier candidate. He's fighting for every vote in Iowa and New Hampshire, and he better be, because it's make or break time. This hour, On Point, with the nomination at stake, John Edwards makes his case for your vote. Later this hour, we'll be joined by Senator Edwards from New Hampshire. But first, we begin with a look at how he's positioning himself on the campaign trail. Joining us from Des Moines, Iowa, is Thomas Beaumont, chief political reporter for the Des Moines Register. Tom, thanks for being with us.
James, it's my pleasure.
And with us from Princeton, New Jersey, is Paul Krugman, columnist for the New York Times. He's also a professor at the Princeton University and author of the new book, The Conscience of a Liberal. Welcome to the program to you.
Hi there.
Tom, let's start with you. Having covered Edwards in 2004 and this time around, is he a different candidate, and how has he changed primarily?
Senator Edwards argues that he is not a fundamentally different candidate, that people who view his position changes on key issues such as health care and the war in Iraq, people who view those as stark changes from 2004, he says, are just sort of parachuting in. Those are key changes in his position profile, but he argues, and it's true to an extent, that he's been on the same trajectory since the end of the 2004 campaign, when at the end of 2003 he gave the Two Americas speech, which really identified, which really became synonymous with his political identity moving forward. But in that speech, there was the outrage, the seeds of the outrage that we hear now. It has just continued along that path. So he is different, but the roots and the seeds of the strong populist message that we're hearing now can be traced directly to his 2004 campaign.
Does this reshaped John Edwards, the more bolder version, appeal to Iowa's Democrats?
Well, he certainly made that effort to become more of a populist, to become more of a, frankly, a what you would describe as a more liberal candidate. In the field, there are fewer such candidates than there were in 2004. It left him some room to move to the left. Dennis Kucinich has not campaigned aggressively in Iowa. There is no Howard Dean this time. And so with Senator Clinton, you know, his prime target, presumed to be entering the race back, so in 2005, Senator Edwards began this sort of leftward shift, and in what I believe was an attempt to sort of rally that part of the party that didn't have the Howard Dean candidate that they did for 4 years prior.
Paul, I want to turn to you now, but first let's take a listen to an Edwards radio ad that's airing, his most recent, that's playing throughout Iowa. Here it is.
This isn't about petty politics or good intentions. Corporate greed and influence in Washington are stealing our children's future. The moral test of our generation is whether we're going to allow this broken system to go on without a fight, or take on corporate greed and stand up for the middle class and American jobs before it's too late. They aren't going to just give their power away. Saving the middle class is going to be an epic battle. And that's a fight I was born for. I'm John Edwards, and I approve this message.
Paul Krugman, does this assault on big corporations, oil, pharmaceuticals, the corporate power and wealth that go along with it, is this a message that resonates among voters? And if so, why?
Well, if you believe a lot of the polling, it is one that resonates. The Democracy Corps had a poll fairly recently and basically said that there's a tremendous amount of anger out in the public, and a lot of it is, in fact, directed against corporations. A lot of it is directed against the sense that it's an unfair system. So there is a real resonance there. And the signature issue of this campaign, at least among the Democrats, has been health care. People are mad about health care. They're scared about lack of it. And Edwards, forced the pace with a much more aggressive, much more comprehensive health care plan than anybody thought was going to be coming out. And he did that back in February. It's now been echoed by a basically very similar plan from Hillary Clinton and a slightly weaker plan from Barack Obama. So it's clear that they all think that you need to have that, at least on the issues, that kind of positioning. People are, at least Democratic voters, and I suspect the nation as a whole, is looking for something like that.
Tom, why do you think that Edwards is not doing as well in the polls this time as he did last?
Well, last time he was, at this point in the race, he was just beginning his climb. At the moment, he is locked in a very tight three-way race with Senators Clinton and Obama. And sure, he led earlier in the year. He was sort of the presumed favorite because he was the leftover candidate from 2004 when he finished a surprising strong second. I think a reason that he isn't doing as well this time is that there is so much enthusiasm for this what is regarded as a very well-qualified field of serious candidates campaigning in Iowa, and I would include those candidates that don't do as well in the polls. That's Senator Biden and Senator Dodd, but they are still viewed as very serious candidates, and they're very, very aggressive in their campaigns. So the field is stacked. He's not as new as he was in 2004, but despite all those things, despite the position changes, despite the scrutiny of his wealthy lifestyle, he is still retaining an incredible amount of loyalty, and that's, the testament to that is that he is hanging in with these national celebrity candidates, Senator Clinton and Senator Obama.
Paul Krugman, you've got an economic background, an extensive economic background, of course. Wouldn't an Edwards administration be bad for business?
It would be bad for some businesses. Some businesses, I think, is the word. Not overall, probably. I mean, the funny thing about healthcare reform is it's actually something that a lot of corporate America, you know, the insurance companies aside, should welcome because it would take a burden off of them. I think the general position is that we've seen that administrations that don't seem all that business friendly have actually presided over very good economic growth. Remember, read what people had to say. Read what Forbes magazine had to say about Bill Clinton and his initial tax increase, and that was followed by an extraordinary boom. So I don't think that's the issue. But there are certainly powerful interest groups out there that would be hurt. There's no way to do the kind of universal health care plan that all of the Democrats are promising without substantially reducing the amount of business that the insurance industry gets and without substantially reducing the prices that drug companies receive. So some groups would certainly be hurt.
Tom Beaumont, most of us don't get to see Edwards in person. Is there a big difference between what we see on TV and him working the crowds one-on-one?
Not substantially. Not like there is with other candidates. He's a very warm person in person. He's got this warmth side that I think is part of his actual character. But I also think that he has honed an ability to identify with people. From his you know, what is by and large a normal American upbringing. But also honed in the courtrooms for 20 years. He was an incredibly successful trial lawyer, obviously skilled at working with small groups of people, convincing small groups of people. So it's ingrained in his personal style to connect with people, and I think that's been a part of his success politically as well as in the courtroom.
And what's it going to take for him to make up that ground, the deficit in Iowa? How is he going to go about that?
I think the race in Iowa boils down, frankly, to who among those top three candidates is going to be the most successful in bringing in new caucus goers, because I think the tightness of the polls reflects that most polls are drawing from people with a past history of going to caucus, and this is viewed as a potentially historic caucus in that, you know, people are suspecting that it's going to be higher participation than ever. And I do believe that Senator Edwards has a strong and loyal organization on the ground in Iowa, but it's a question of whether or not, I mean, our polls show that he is not as strong in bringing in the new caucus goers as Senators Clinton and Obama. So it's going to be a race for who can bring in the newbies, and it's so impossible to measure that. You know, unfortunately, 15 days out, we have no real good, clear way of measuring that.
Although there is a sign that supporters of Hillary Clinton are a lot more committed than other candidates. Is that right?
Their support for Senator Clinton is very strong. Obviously, they have cleared a number of obstacles. They are not deterred by Clinton supporters are not deterred by what her opponents say are high negative negative ratings in national polls. These are people who are committed to her on issues, who respect her tenacity in the face of the national scrutiny that she's faced for so long. So her supporters are pretty firm. But you look at Senator Edwards and Senator Obama's supporters, and they are more likely to choose someone else as a second choice. These are people who obviously are looking for a Clinton alternative. So I see what you're saying about Clinton supporters being stronger or more permanent.
Paul Krugman, just 30 seconds here, but are you among those who believe that this is a make-or-break contest for John Edwards? If he doesn't win in Iowa, that it's over?
Yeah, it's fairly clear. He's gotten essentially almost no national press compared with the others. He's got to do something that most national reporting has treated as a two-person race, so he needs to do something to really show that, no, it's not. It's really a three-person race, and so he has to win Iowa.
This is On Point. I'm James Hattori, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with about presidential candidate John Edwards, who this week Newsweek magazine dubbed the sleeper candidate in the Democratic field. A recent CNN poll says he's the only Democrat that can beat the Republican frontrunners. We are talking with Paul Krugman, a columnist with the New York Times, a professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University as well. Paul, in a new ad, Edwards says, quote, saving the middle class is going to be an epic battle, and that's a fight I was born for, unquote. You know, earlier in the campaign, or even in the last campaign, he said poverty was the epic battle of a lifetime. Is he kind of blurring the distinction, or is he trying to appeal to a broader base there?
Well, I think he's trying to appeal to a broader base, but, if you actually look at the figures on, growing disparities in income, it's not the poor falling behind the middle class. It's the poor and the middle class falling behind the very well off. So in a sense, that's not that big a stretch. Most voters are middle class, or at least think they're middle class. So that's for a national election, that's what you got to do.
Is it his rhetoric that distinguishes him at this point from Hillary and Obama, or are there truly fundamentally different policies?
Well, there's some, I wouldn't call them fundamentally different. There's, again, on health care, which is probably the signature issue, there is a significant difference. The Edwards plan is stiffer, more truly universal than the Obama plan, though not very different from the Clinton plan. There's a difference in approach. Edwards says we're going to fight this struggle to the death with the lobbyists, and Obama saying I'm going to invite insurance companies to the big table to help negotiate a plan for health care. So there's a definite and Clinton somewhere in between. So in terms of who comes out with these policy proposals first, it's usually the Edwards leading the charge. So in some sense, there's a reasonably clear ranking from left to right, which is kind of Edwards, Clinton, Obama. But it's not, compared with the Republicans, they all look the same.
Let's open up the conversation and take some calls. Wendy is on the line from Hartford, Vermont. Wendy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. What's on your mind?
My comment is that John Edwards is not just getting so little press, he's getting absolutely no press. And there's so many people throughout the country who are working hard for him right now, and I think he's got a very good message, and not just to the middle class and the downtrodden, but to many people out there who want change and who want to see the money taken out of the drug companies and out of the pockets of the drug companies and the healthcare insurance companies. We need to do something about that, and I think John Edwards, if people had a chance to hear his message, might change their mind a little bit, those who are undecided or have already decided about who can really help this country right now.
Okay, Wendy, thank you. Paul, obviously he's trying to hone on the issues, but something he's got to overcome is the fact that he's not new. He's not a woman, and he's not a black American either. Is that...
In previous elections, that would have been considered a big advantage, right? I mean, this is, yeah. It's telling you something about the state of mind of of the country, at least of the news media, and I guess to some extent the voters. Sure, he's been around, but you know, this is it is an interesting thing. And if you took the person who seems most radical from a point of view of personal identity, it would be Barack Obama. And if you took the person who's most radical from the point of view of the actual policies he's espousing, it would be the guy who looks most like the kind of person we've elected to the White House before, which is John Edwards. And I think there's a lot of confusion over that. People assume that just because of what he looks like, Obama must be the leftmost of the candidates, when he's actually among those three the rightmost. It is a question of image versus substance, I guess.
Okay, let's take another call. Michael is on the line from Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Michael.
Hi, sir. Yes, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I really love Senator Edwards' politics, and I think that fighting the special interests is the most important thing we face. But in my mind, I feel like, you know, this Bush-Cheney war machine has really fleeced the nation and also the pharmaceuticals. But it seems like getting to the root of the problem, the banking and the financial system that has really kind of created this inflationary cycle of booms and busts ever since we allowed them to take over our money supply with the Federal Reserve. Now, there's a candidate, Ron Paul, that's attracting a lot of young people that normally I think would like John Edwards, but he seems to be more open-minded about fighting those kind of special interests that get to the root of the problem, where, you know, we have to get back the control of our government for the people and follow the Constitution. And these people are real gung-ho about the Constitution and simpler government. But the way I see it, I like John Edwards because he says, okay, well, we might need simpler government, but we've already been so kind of fleeced by the war machine and the special interests and the lobbyists that how can we get our money back, really, to get, you know, a middle class again and to get our country back. So I'm confused about those differences. I wonder if Senator Edwards, who I really respect, and I love, my mother's supporting him too, it's hard to support a Republican, but I would like to know how John Edwards could tell us that he understands some of these issues too. Thank you.
Paul, what's your take on that?
Well, you know, the Ron Paul phenomenon is really interesting. I think his forthright opposition to the war and basically what sound like support for civil liberties issues have gotten him the ear of a lot of people who would normally not even look at someone on the Republican side. When all is said and done, though, on domestic issues, he believes that Social Security is illegitimate. He believes we should go back to the gold standard. So what you got in Ron Paul is a genuine libertarian. I don't think in the end that's a significant fraction of the electorate. I don't think it goes very far. Edwards has been focusing primarily on domestic issues, and that's, I guess, the, you know, that that's been true in general of the Democratic field. I think most people, a lot of people who are attracted to Ron Paul would be very unhappy with the policies he would actually try to pursue in office, except for getting out of Iraq. But anyway, it is an interesting thing. It's just showing you, I think, the Ron Paul phenomenon is showing you how far the sentiment of a lot of voters is from what mainstream sentiment in inside the Beltway is.
And at this point, we have the man who we've been talking about so far this program joining us at this point, Mr. John Edwards, presidential candidate. He's in New Hampshire today. Senator Edwards, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be with you.
Glad to have you, sir. Senator, the Des Moines Register endorsed you back in 2004, but last weekend the paper picked Hillary Clinton, saying this is a different race, that they too seldom saw the, quote, positive, optimistic campaign that they found appealing last time around, and that your harsh anti-corporate rhetoric would make it difficult to forge change. Sir, why should voters believe you will get things done by strong-arming policy over the will of corporate America?
Well, because, and this is, by the way, the Des Moines Register is a great newspaper with a fine editorial board. I just had a fundamental difference with them about this. I think that if you look at the entrenched corporate interests in Washington, the only way we're going to bring about universal health care, energy transformation, tax policy that's fair to everybody, trade policy that works for all Americans, the only way those things are going to happen is to be willing to take those interests on head on, the way some great American presidents have in the past, Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman. I think that's what's going to be necessary to bring about the change we need. And I don't think you can begin by sitting at a table with them and negotiating and hoping they'll voluntarily give their power away. I think that's a fantasy.
But can you be anti-business, or at least appear to be anti-business, and get elected president in this country?
Oh, I'm not. There's nothing anti-business about this. I'm for the American people. I'm for having the democracy work for everybody. I'm very much pro small business, pro growth, pro strengthening the economy, all of which would benefit business. And if you look at my economic policies, all substantively taken together, the business community will actually benefit tremendously from what I'm proposing. What I'm against is, it'll be very specific, I'm against oil companies and gas companies preventing us from attacking global warming in a serious way. I'm against drug companies and insurance companies preventing universal health care. I'm against big multinational corporations driving a trade policy that's costing us American jobs and doing incredible damage to the middle class in this country. So I can be very specific about these things. This is not just rhetoric. And I think those are the things that have to change in order to really strengthen and grow the middle class in America and to create some financial security that's largely missing right now.
Senator, the media are saying, for all that's worth, the media are saying that you've transformed, that you're bolder and feistier. Do you feel an urgency that you didn't feel 4 years ago?
I think there is an urgency. I don't know how related it is to me specifically, but I think that if you look at what's happening and you're actually willing to listen, instead of hanging around Washington and talking to the people there, if you're out in the country listening, in Iowa, for example, to what people are saying, they're very concerned about whether they're going to be able to do what their parents did for them, which is leave their kids a better life. And they think the health care system is extraordinarily inefficient and expensive and dysfunctional. They think the tax policy is warped toward enriching the people who are already doing well and not helping the middle class. They think that we have not taken on the crisis of global warming, and that inequality, economic inequality, is worse than it's been in many decades. All those things are true. And that doesn't mean we can't do much better. We can do much better. I mean, there's nothing changed about our people. We're just as good and strong and courageous as we've ever been. But we need a president with a different perspective who actually is focused on those things and making in all those areas, making the government work for all Americans, not just for a few.
Senator, a CNN poll this month indicated you are the only Democrat who would beat all four Republican candidates in head-to-head matchups. Do you think you're the most electable candidate?
Yes, I do. And I think the evidence of that is overwhelming. I mean, you mentioned the CNN poll. I'd not only beat all the Republicans, I actually beat them by significant margins, some of them by double digits. I think that's consistent with most of the polling that's been done. But I think more important than the polls is the fact that I grew up in a small town in rural America, that I was elected to the U.S. Senate in a red state, and that this message of change that's grounded in, when I'm in Iowa, for example, or here in New Hampshire campaigning, people can see that when I talk about all these issues, these substantive areas, they're all grounded in my own life. This is not something I read in a book. You know, I come from a family where my grandparents worked in the mills, my dad worked in the mills, all for the purpose of giving me a real chance, and I want that chance there for everybody. That's what the middle class, jobs, that's what this is about. That's what the election should be about.
But, you know, there's something interesting about that term electable. Isn't there a subtle message behind it which says that it may highlight the fact that, you know, you're a white male running while the other leading candidates are a woman and an African-American male? Do you think that's a factor in being electable?
No, I don't. I think America is in a different place than it used to be. And I'm very proud of the fact that my party has a very diverse group of presidential candidates. I think it's more about a strong message that people feel that is personal, that they know that every day in the presidency I will get up fighting for these things because it's what's driven me. I'm 54 years old. It's driven me my entire life. And it's not just a political message. You know, when I talk about corporate power standing between us and what we need to do, it's real. I mean, it comes from inside me. And we can make this country work for everybody, but we have work to do to accomplish that.
Let's turn to Bill, who's calling from Cedar Falls, Iowa. Bill, are you there?
I am indeed. Thank you.
Hi. What's your question for the senator?
Well, it's a comment, mostly. I'll preface it by saying I've been at every caucus since 1976, and for me, Senator Edwards is the most potent candidate I've seen in those 30-odd years. He's an optimist. I think he embodies the American dream, and I think that translates into a nightmare for Republican strategists, both in the way that he gets the issues. His answers are incisive. They're constructive. He's ethical, and his work life, his family life, his public service are all exemplary, and I think those are all things that people are going to connect with, and that's what translates to those double-digit leads over every one of the top-tier Republican candidates.
Well, Senator, you've got one supporter, at least, in Iowa. What's your response to that?
Well,
just say thank you.
Bravo and thank you. I don't have anything to add to it. He was more articulate than I was about it. I'm very appreciative of having that support, and I thank him.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Mark, who is from Ely, Iowa. Mark, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
My question for Senator Edwards goes like this. For decades, I know you've been fighting for the interest of common people, and you use the law as an attorney to fight for those interests against powerful corporations. In the government, you'll have to actually make law. The law won't exist, and it will require more than just fighting the various parties. How do you hope to actually overcome the powerful influence of the special interests like the oil companies to make law?
It's actually a very thoughtful question. What I believe is the responsibility of the president, excuse me, the responsibility of the president in the environment that exists today is to do two things simultaneously. One is to work with the Congress, excuse me, and the leadership in Congress to get things accomplished. The second is to galvanize the American people behind the cause. In other words, if you're talking about oil companies or gas companies or drug companies, you've got to have a president who says, we're going to stop your undue influence on what's happening. By the way, I don't think the American people require much convincing that there's a completely disproportionate amount of corporate influence, corporate power in what's happening in governmental decisions. I think they know that. But just convincing them that needs to be done. And secondly, you've got to bring America and thereby politicians to the notion that for the democracy to work for everybody, we're going to have to get money out of politics, which means public financing of our campaigns. We've got to do something about ethics, which means stopping this revolving door from lobbying back into government and then back into lobbying so that people are actually lobbying their friends, the people they've just worked with. I mean, those are the substantive things that need to be done.
Senator, we'll let you clear your throat, and we'll be back after this. Thank you, by the way, to Paul Krugman for joining us today. I'm James Satori, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Senator, in your new ad, or one of your new ads, you say that saving the middle class is going to be an epic battle. It's a fight you were born for. It's a growing populist kind of theme, almost, I hate to say, Lou Dobbsian. How do you convince voters that it's not just a politically expedient tactic?
Because I'm 54 years old, and this is the cause I've been engaged in my entire life. There's nothing new about this. If you go back to when I ran for the United States Senate, I talked about then about being the people's senator, not the senator for the special interests. When I first ran for public office, I committed to not take money from Washington lobbyists or PACs, and I never have, never taken a dime from them. I spent 20 years in courtrooms fighting the same battles for people against these same interests, and it's the place that I come from. You know, having grown up in a family where people worked very hard to give me a better life. It's what drives me every day toward the presidency. And so there's nothing new or fancy about this. It comes from inside me. It comes from my gut. I mean, my fight for the middle class, my fight to end poverty, my fight for universal health care is a very personal one and one I'm deeply committed to.
But last time around, didn't you focus more on the poverty side of it and not so much the middle class? Is this just a tweaking of the message, or are people going to see it as, you know, an attempt to broaden your political base?
Well, I think an honest answer to that, James, is that last time with people, it was easy to take the Two Americas message and turn it into the rich versus the poor, and that really wasn't what I was saying if you actually heard me speak about it. What I was saying essentially is what I'm saying now, which is they're a small group of very powerful, very well-financed interests, and they're doing very well. The wealthiest Americans, big corporations. Nothing wrong with people doing well in America. We want people to do well. We embrace aspiration. That's a great quality in this country. I'd be against myself if I weren't for that. But the flip side of that is we don't want those opportunities to just be available to a few. And what I believe is that the best financed interests are using their power against the interests of the American people. And that's what, at least from my perspective, this is about. That's why I talk about the middle class, why I talk about jobs, why I talk about universal health care. It's why on all these issues, I might add, literally ranging from tax to trade to universal health care, poverty, every one of these issues I have led with very substantive, specific ideas about what we should do.
Okay, let's go to another caller. Asher is in Dover, New Hampshire. How are you, Asher?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on the so-called universal health care plan of Senator John Edwards. Really the only one in this race in the Democratic Party, well, in either party, who offers a truly universal plan is Dennis Kucinich. John Edwards' plan still subsidizes the private insurance companies, and it still mandates that people buy their plans. And it puts a huge burden on small businesses by mandating that they buy plans for their employees. I think that's it's really interesting to me that Mr. Edwards says that he wants to fight the private interest, but he's not willing to adopt H.R. 676 plan of a truly universal, not-for-profit health care plan.
Senator, and another point to that along that same line is a lot of people have observed that universal health doesn't, the finances just don't work unless you do a nonprofit kind of scheme. Your answer, sir.
Sure. Well, it's a perfectly fair question. Here's my answer. I've spent years now working on this, talking with people, and making judgments about what I think will, in fact, work and cover everybody. And the structure of the proposal that I have made does have a mandate. Because without a mandate, you don't cover everybody. The only way a plan can be universal is to have a mandate. And my proposal has a mandate. The thing that's a little off about what the caller just said is in my proposal, you actually have a choice. Every consumer in America, which will be every American, will have a choice between a government plan, which is essentially Medicare Plus, or a private plan. Now, those two will compete with one another. Now, on top of that, the private plans are regulated in a way that they are not today. They cannot charge more than 15% overhead and profit. Today, they're charging 40% or more. They're required to cover everyone. They're required to have mental health parity. They're required to cover preventive care, chronic care, long-term care, dental care, vision care. And this coverage is mobile. You can take it with you wherever you go. So the whole notion of this is people have very different, diverse views about whether they'd rather have just a government-run, single-payer health care plan or whether they'd rather have this kind of competition. And instead of me imposing my will on America, what I'm going to do is let the American people choose. If you like government health care, you can choose it. And it may be that this turns out to be single-payer if that's the direction this goes. That's perfectly fine with me. There are real advantages to single-payer, which the caller is pointing out. He's right about that. But what I've done is set up a system where the American consumer will actually choose which makes the most sense.
Okay, Senator, it's a long campaign season, as you know, and I think it'd be useful to listeners to sort of capsulize where you stand on a variety of issues. If you don't mind, I'll name four or five, and if you can just give us a brief summary of your position, I think it would be instructive.
I'd be happy to.
Let's start with the Iraq War.
Yes. We need to end the war, and let me be really specific. I will, in my first year in the presidency, have all combat troops out of Iraq end combat missions in Iraq and no permanent military bases in Iraq. That's the short version. There are other things, obviously, that have to be done, engaging the Sunni and Shia leadership into reaching a political reconciliation, intense diplomacy in the region, particularly with Iran and Syria, as we leave, to help provide some stability there. But that's, since you want it quick, that's the quick.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough thing to do, but I think it's a little helpful. What about defusing Iran?
Well, I think that what we should do, Iran on the nuclear question.
Yes.
I think what we should do, there's a clear path to me from my perspective. We've got a leader, Ahmadinejad, who's not popular in his own country, and I think that presents a great opportunity to us working with our European friends and the European banking system, because they have economic leverage that we don't have. And what we should be doing is putting a proposal on the table of carrots and sticks, essentially. In other words, if they will verifiably give up their nuclear weapons program, which, by the way, according to the NIE, they stopped in 2003. But if they verifiably continue that, then we will help them with their economy. Their economy is in a bad place. And if they don't, then there will be economic sanctions. But that proposal has to be made in a very public way, so that the Iranian people know that it's being made, and it can help drive a wedge between some very moderate people who live in Iran, who have a different view of the world than Ahmadinejad.
Okay, what about the topic of gay marriage?
I am a strong supporter of civil unions and making the roughly 1,100 benefits and rights that exist in the federal government, you know, from immigration to Social Security to taxes, adoption, making all those rights available to gay and lesbian couples. And there are a couple other things, just if I can do a quick add-on. I would do everything in my power to eliminate DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which I think was discriminatory. And second, I will end Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
And what about immigration reform?
Boy, this is really quick.
Yeah, it's radio.
Three things. One, secure our southern border. There are a whole group of devices we need to use to do that. Secondly, tougher on employers who are violating the law and in some cases abusing workers. And third, I'm not for amnesty, but I am for a path to earn citizenship. And the couple of things that I would focus on are payment of a fine, a reasonable fine that can actually be paid, for people who want to become American citizens and learning to speak English.
I'm sure people who have other questions can find your pamphlets and learn all your position in depth. But let's go back to the callers right now. Janice is on the line from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Janice.
Sir Edwards, love you down here, and I want to remind everybody 50% of the voters down here are still undecided, and the press never covers that. What I actually want to ask you about, Senator Edwards, is if you could elaborate a little bit. I noticed in one of the debates that Senator Obama said that he was very much in favor of nuclear power, and I've read some of your positions, and I think you support the renewables, especially since they're going to create new jobs and new green industries in South Carolina where we really need the jobs. Also, I wondered if you could comment on, we're fighting a big coal power plant that they want to put here, and so I'd like for you to comment about what you said about a moratorium on coal plants until we can figure out what we're going to do with the CO2.
Senator?
Well, thank you. She's obviously paying close attention. I wish all voters were paying this much attention. What I would say is, let me just hit the issues that she raises. First, nuclear power. There is a difference between the three major candidates on our side on this issue. I am against building more nuclear power plants, and I'm against it for a variety of reasons, including that we don't have a safe way to dispose of the waste. I think they are dangerous and create a target. And then third, they're extremely expensive to build. It takes forever to get them online. We haven't built a nuclear power plant in decades. So, and by the way, if we double the nuclear power plants on Earth, it would deal with about 1/7 of the global warming problem. So for me, this is not, nuclear power is not the answer. As to coal-fired power plants, you know, since we're now 4% of the world's population putting out 25% of the world's greenhouse gases, we don't need to make a bad situation worse. We need to be going in the opposite direction. So what I have proposed is a moratorium on the building of any more coal-fired power plants until we have the technology and the way to implement it that will sequester the carbon Now, I have suggested that we invest in a serious way in the development of that technology, which I still support, but that moratorium is something that I think needs to be in place.
All right, let's go to Carl, who is on the line from Cedar Falls, Iowa. Carl.
Hello, thanks for taking my call, Senator Edwards. I have a quick question for you. There has been a complete lack of accountability in this administration and even in past administrations. What are you going to do to change that on the world scale as far as making American leaders liable to war crimes in other countries?
Well, I think there are a variety of things that we need to be doing. We, first of all, as to accountability, you know, the Congress needs to be more aggressive about holding the President of the United States accountable for what the administration does and does not do. I think that's improved some with the Democratic takeover of the Congress, but it's certainly not solved. Second, we need a president who runs a transparent executive branch. I mean, the president needs to understand that the executive branch in the White House doesn't belong to him. It belongs to the American people. And so you deserve to see what's happening, how decisions are being made, et cetera. Third, America needs to reengage with international institutions that we have, in some cases, been engaged with in the past. You know, Bush doesn't believe in treaties. He doesn't believe in the United Nations. He doesn't believe in the international criminal courts. All that would be changed when I'm president of the United States.
Senator, why are you a better candidate than Hillary Clinton?
I'd rather not criticize Senator Clinton. I can tell you why I think I'm the strongest candidate, because I don't defend the system in Washington. I think it needs to be changed. I don't think it'll work unless we're willing to change it. I don't think we can get the things done that need to be done unless we're willing to change it. And I don't think you can make deals with these entrenched interests. If that would work, if you could make deals with oil companies and power companies and drug companies, then we would have gotten everything we've needed over the last couple of decades, and we have not. Just ask any American living in Iowa or New Hampshire or anywhere else. So I think we have to have a president who, in their gut, knows that you've got to be willing to challenge these people and take them on, and that's what I'm going to do.
You say you don't want to say ill things about the other Democrats, and I understand that, but voters have to make a choice, too. Don't you have to highlight those differences?
Oh, there's nothing wrong with highlighting the differences, as long as it's substantive, and or your view of what needs to happen. There's nothing wrong with that. But what I think sometimes these criticisms become petty and personal and degrading. And I think I think we should be above that. But I think pointing out differences, a moment ago, for example, a caller asked about nuclear power, and I do have a difference with Senator Obama and Senator Clinton on the building of new nuclear power plants. There are differences in our health care plans. There are differences in the case of Senator Clinton, who we just spoke about, in our belief about what we have to do to change the way the system works in Washington. She's more defensive of it, and I think it needs to be changed. So there are differences, and we want caucus goers and voters to know that.
All right, let's go to another call. Ben is on the line from Des Moines, Iowa. Hi, Ben.
Hi, James. Senator Edwards, I've seen you three times in Des Moines. The last time at Roosevelt High School, you really showed your passion, your fire. You convinced me that you could take on the lobbyists, that you could change the system. After that, your ads that you've been running haven't had quite as much, you know, passion and fire. We need to hear you coming out strong like you did at Roosevelt High School. And it wasn't just Bonnie Raitt and Jackson Brown. It was you. And I just want to encourage you to keep fighting that way. I switched that night to your campaign. I'm going to caucus for you. I think you are the best candidate. And are you still around? Are you going to be speaking? If you are, you got to keep showing that passion, man.
Okay, Ben, you're trying out for staff. Senator, go ahead.
Well, I appreciate his comments very much, and I think people do care in Iowa and New Hampshire about seeing fire and passion, because what it does is it demonstrates that the feelings are real. I mean, that they come from deep inside you, I think it matters because it shows what will drive you every day in the presidency. And I've been through this before. I know that in Iowa and New Hampshire, what you have to do in these final days before the caucus and the primary. And I can assure him that caucus goers in Iowa and New Hampshire primary voters are going to see fire and passion from me.
Senator, we just got a few seconds left, but very quickly, how's your wife doing? Will we see more of her on the campaign trail?
Yeah, she's been with me in Iowa and then in New Hampshire over the last several days, and she's been out campaigning. She will continue to do that. To answer your question, she's doing great. We monitor her health very closely, but she feels good, and she's got energy. I'm actually very, very excited about how she's doing.
Senator, we appreciate your taking time from your hectic schedule to join us this hour. It has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website at onpointradio.org. I'm James Satori, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.